Hi, everyone. Welcome to Behind the Numbers. My name is Dave Bookbinder, and welcome to the show where we dig deeper to understand what really matters most in business. We are coming to you live today from the RVN Television Studios, as we always do. And today we're going to be talking about creating a workplace to be proud of. And my guest today is Jerry Dugan, who's founder and CEO of BTR Impact. He's also the author of the book Beyond the Rut, and he also hosts a podcast called Beyond the Rut. Hey, Jerry, welcome to Behind the Numbers.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me on here. I'm excited.
I am too. And I just did a real quick intro of who you are, but why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what you do with BTR Impact?
Yeah. So I help leaders really create success on their terms so that they're having that alignment with who they are, their values, plus that vision of what success would look like for their leadership career. What kind of environment would they have? What would they want to be known for? But really, ultimately, how they also get to hang up that hat at the end of the day, go home, and enjoy the life they wanted outside the workspace as well. Because we spend, a third of our life in a workspace every single week. And we tend to neglect the stuff around that, our families. So I want people to have success in both spaces. And so BTR Impact kind of helps leaders focus on that. What's happening in the workplace? Why are people leaving the workplace? Why are people disengaging, lower morale? And if I can help leaders fix that, then they have the space and the time to really think about, what about the rest of my life? What about success at the end of this journey I'm on? So that's the big picture of what BTR Impact is about. And then also the micro, the niched down, what's the specific thing that I help people with? And that's employee engagement and workplace culture.
Yeah, and so much to unpack there, because this is what I talk about a lot outside of my so-called day job in creating great culture environments. But the truth of the matter is, besides creating the space and the freedom that you just described, you're also going to create a great business that's profitable. So let's start to unpack that. And when we roll back the calendar to the COVID pandemic and then what was called the Great Resignation, which happened largely in 2021, everybody understood that was the big quit, right? Everybody decided it was time to leave their jobs. You have said that the real year of the Great Resignation was actually 2022. Why don't you speak to that?
Yeah. So a lot of folks saw it in the headlines. There was this big spike. I think on average in the United States, around 30 million people leave their jobs voluntarily every year. And that kicked up into the 40 million range in 2021. And then 2022 said, hold my beer, and went for the 50 million mark. I think they landed at 48 million people quit their jobs voluntarily. And so that was the bigger spike when it came to voluntary turnover. And this is different from just regular, involuntary turnovers where you didn't do your job well and you got fired or you got laid off. Those are involuntary types of terminations of employment. Whereas voluntary is, I got a bigger, better deal somewhere else. I'm going to go there. And that was the bigger spike. And that was kind of the more controllable thing. And I think it's because a lot of organizations started to double down around returning to work. The restrictions around quarantine were lifting. The workplace had changed, but a lot of senior leaders thought that we needed to just return back to normal, get everybody back in the office. Well, people got a taste of what work from home meant. They got to juggle their work and life in tandem. It was almost like a return to pre-industrial revolution times, where an industrial revolution, you have to go to the factory to make the widgets. You had to go to the store to sell the goods. And that almost erased this agrarian society where our work and our life was intertwined. If we worked on a farm, we also lived on that farm. If I sold baked goods, chances were my home was right above the bakery or next to the bakery. Same if I owned, and you see this in small villages in Germany, where the deli is attached to the home. And so how is it this guy got in at 4 a.m. to sell meats next to the baker who started selling breads? They both live where they work, and they shut down the business and they go to the back half or the top half of the home. And I think the pandemic allowed that return. It was like, I get up in the morning, I put on a shirt to get on camera, maybe a jacket, and I talk to my coworkers. I have my KPIs, my key productivity indicators, performance indicators, and I got my job done. And chances are I got my job done faster than if I had gone to the office. So now I can, take care of my kids. I can engage with them, play with them, go to the park if we feel safe enough to do so. And so that commute time was cut from 30 to 60 minutes or more down to nothing. It's the time it takes for you to get from one side of the home to wherever your computer is. And when there was this blanket call to return to work, we saw a lot of people say, well, I'm going to look for remote work. I'm going to look for more hybrid type of work. And I think that's where we saw that bigger spike. Plus, you know, in the healthcare industry, that was just that burnout was there. The essential workers had pretty much been going nonstop through the whole pandemic. And at the tail end of this pandemic, people are starting to, you know, gripe about healthcare. You know, they're just trying to make money off of us. And the nurses are like, hey, wait, I stayed on staff. I did the noble thing and I stayed put and I worked and took care of these patients. But I'm also noticing we brought in a lot of travel nurses and we paid them more. So why don't I go do that? And then the other hospitals were like, well, we were paying travel nurses this much. We're paying our staff this much. We need more nurses. Why don't we get somewhere in the middle? And so we saw that across different industries where people now got competitive about salary. So you have that variable too. So there's the work-life balance. I get to work from home. I get to spend more time with my family. I've cut out things like commutes. And there are other organizations that have really embraced that. And then there's this other variable of pay. You know, you paid temporary staff a lot more than you're paying the permanent staff. I'm going to go somewhere where they're going to pay me as a permanent staff member, but more. And then Gallup uncovered growth opportunities. You know, we kind of just put our heads down and kept, you know, plodding forward. And people are looking for, well, how do I grow? You know, what kind of skills can I gain? How do I get bigger and better at what I do? And the companies that tried to just keep the same MO lost out to companies that said, you know what, it's not going to cost us a whole lot more to say we can get you these certifications within 6 months. And so all that kind of brewed together to make this bigger, worst year of resignations in 2022. And then it started to simmer off a little bit in 2023. My understanding is that we haven't gone back to pre-pandemic turnover numbers, but we have come somewhere between 2021's numbers and actually, I think we got lower than 2021's numbers. So we're not great resignation level, but we're also not back in the 30 million.
Yeah, I know for knowledge workers who don't have to be in the office, in the factory to do their jobs, everybody that I've talked to up and down New York charts have all said that they really, as you said, come to gain the appreciation for this flexibility. And they kind of demand that going forward. And I think the smart organizations have recognized that a hybrid kind of environment makes the most sense these days. At least that's what I'm hearing. You mentioned Gallup. So every year our friends at Gallup publish indications on total levels of employee engagement in the US and globally. And I watch that because I update my statistics and my talk decks. But every year it seems like roughly one third of the US workforce is engaged. So 7 out of 10 people checked out, doing the bare minimum to get by. Why is that?
I think because a lot of us, it's kind of like that story about the two guys who started working for the railroad at the same time. And one day, one of them is working on the railroad. It's been like 15 to 20 years. And he's still plodding along. He's still hammering the same spikes in the ground. And, you know, a train rolls up and it stops. And a guy gets out of the caboose and he's like, hey, what's going on, buddy? It turns out the other guy really climbed the ranks. And he's now one of the executives in the company, same company. And after their exchange, the train goes back where it came from. And the other workers ask the guy who's hammering spikes, like, hey, how come he's in the back of the train as the executive and you're still hammering spikes all these years later? And the guy replied, well, the difference is I signed on for X number of dollars an hour to hammer spikes. He signed on to work for the railroad company. And so a lot of us, we sign on with a company maybe initially because of the benefits or because of what the company stands for or how it might benefit our career in the long run. But then after a while, that honeymoon phase kind of wears off. And you kind of follow one of those two buckets. Either you're fully engaged, you still believe in what the work you're doing has an impact for customers, your community, for yourself. And you just keep thriving for that success of the overall good. And other folks, you're just like, you know, I'm just here for the paycheck now. You know, I've got other priorities. I'm looking for the next best thing. And there's really kind of three buckets. You know, like you mentioned, engaged, disengaged. And there's kind of like with that disengaged group, you've got two buckets. You have your actively disengaged. They're the guys who just, they hate it. They've been scorned one time too many. They probably weren't on right hire as far as attitude in the first place. And you can tell who they are. they're the ones that are at the water cooler looking for somebody they can share their trash talk with. They're going to talk trash about the leadership. They're going to talk trash about coworkers. They're going to talk trash about customers, policies, process. It doesn't matter. If it came out of somebody's mouth other than their own, it's a stupid idea. And you just kind of look at them and wonder, why are you even here then? And the reality is because they haven't been kicked out. You know, they feel entitled to that paycheck. They're going to keep showing up and collecting that paycheck. And so now you've got that other extreme, that the actively disengaged. They're kind of the counter to your actively engaged. Those are the folks that are the walking billboard. They love the mission of the company. The core values line up with their own core values. They're actively recruiting people to fill the ranks of the company. Like, hey, you got to come work for us. We got these benefits. We got this opportunity. We help people in this way. And the pay is really good, or the pay is challenging, you know, whatever it is, but they're actively talking well about the company. And the guys in the middle, they're the ones showing up for the paycheck. They come in and they've got that contractual agreement. I come in for X number of hours to do this type of work. And as long as I keep my nose clean and get my job done, I keep coming back every day and collecting that paycheck. They're the most malleable group. And all of the folks that I've talked about so far have the potential to slide up and down this continuum. But it's like the battleground is for the people in the middle. And that's where the bulk of your work staff is. About 50 to 60% of them are in this bucket of not engaged. And it's kind of like, this is where leadership comes in too, because who you let have the louder voice is going to influence that middle group one way or the other. You know, they may not be fully actively engaged, but they will be engaged more. They'll perform better. Whereas if you let the actively disengaged have all the sounding boards and voice and the megaphones, you'll see that middle group starts to perform less and disengage more. And then they start to leave. And so that's the battleground that every workplace encounters. Even the best workplaces with the best cultures, whether it's Gallup, who's analyzing them, Becker's comes out with a list of like best healthcare organizations. I think Forbes does a top 100 companies. You told me about an ETF that looks at companies based on how they treat their employees and employee ratings and engagement scores, and they perform well too. So even those companies struggle with this dynamic of actively engaged, not engaged, and actively disengaged. And so it's an ongoing effort to keep the environment in such a way that the actively engaged are the ones that are influencing the folks in the middle the most.
Yeah. And Jerry, we're going to talk about turnover, the cost of turnover, and how to reduce turnover. Because like it's said at the top of the program, we do need to talk about how to create that workforce to be proud of. We've done a good job identifying problems, but we are coming up against a commercial break. But before we break, tell the audience how they can connect with you if they want to learn more about you or if they'd like to work with you.
Yes. Best place to go is my website, ETRimpact.com. The BTR stands for Beyond the Rut, because I want leaders to have that Beyond the Rut impact in their careers, in their lives, in the lives of others. So BTRimpact.com.
Great. Jerry, don't go anywhere. You watching and listening at home, you sit tight as well. We will be right back on Behind the Numbers after this quick break.
Hi, I'm Angela Pipersburg, and I have a new show here in RVN Television called The Angela Pipersburg Show. And I want you to join me every week as I sit with guests and we discuss their life journeys, share wisdom, and tips that will inspire you to live your best life. Don't miss The Angela Pipersburg Show every week here on RVN Television, where we're celebrating life and we're inspiring you to greatness.
Hi, I'm Dr. Esther Malave, and welcome to my show, Achieving a Better You. Through this show, we're going to explore ways to make a better version of you. For example, nutrition, finance, fitness, health. Remember that there's always a way of making a better version of yourself, no matter what the circumstances are. And remember to look for Achieving a Better You show on RVN TV.
Some say the world has never been more divided, more self-centered,
gosh, thank you so much,
more uncaring.
Thank you. Oh, miss! Thank you.
That we've never been more disconnected. But through our windows, we're able to see so much good every day. And it's clear that a little kindness is never really little.
Did you know that only 8% of people who set their goals, they actually succeed in achieving them? Well, if you want to be a part of that 8%, then you need to tune in to Achieve with Wanda Martin, where I will teach you tips, tools, and strategies on how to achieve your goals in any field and on any level. So tune in, watch me on the RVN Network on how to achieve your goals and be a part of that 8%.
And welcome back to Behind the Numbers. Thanks for joining us again today. We're talking about creating a great workplace to be proud of, and we're doing it with Jerry Dugan, who's the founder and CEO of BTR Impact. And Jerry, welcome back. In that first segment, we had a good conversation. I'll call it framing the issues and problems around employee engagement and turnover. I want to start the second segment here by talking about turnover in terms of the impact on the organization. And you can feel free to talk about it from the standpoint of economics. You can talk about it in terms of the intangibles, the institutional knowledge piece, but the cost of turnover is really much higher than most people think it is.
Oh, it's huge. And we all hear those CEOs say all the time, you know, the greatest resource in any organization is the people. They'll say that whenever they're called up to the front to give a little speech about an award, about a milestone, about a challenge they face. Like, hey, I just want you all to know you're our greatest resource. And you know, some of those companies really do live up to that. They have low rates of voluntary turnover, low rates of safety issues, low rates of, you know, EEOC complaints, those kinds of things. But then you have those that they just give it lip service. They have high rates of turnover. And what they never really think about, especially the ones that have the high rates of turnover, they think, well, we'll just get more people. We'll just get more people. Everybody's replaceable. And to a degree, and these usually come from people who are just very blunt, like, yeah, people are replaceable. And it's like, yes, it's true that people do come and go. You know, it's just, that's life. Some people retire, some people move, some people just get that step up in their career that, you know, their current place can't offer. But there's this old saying that, you know, people don't quit their jobs, they quit their managers. And Marcus Buckingham wrote a book, 9 Lies About Work. I think I got the title right. And in one of the chapters, he talks about that the most influential thing about whether or not an employee stays is the direct manager. It's the interaction, the trust built, the feelings of psychological safety, the confidence that this leader has my best interest for both my career and my well-being. You know, even though the individual is responsible for their own well-being, they at least have the trust and confidence that that leader is not there to throw them under the bus, get them fired as soon as possible, or always dangling the stick more than the carrot kind of thing. And so with that, you know, what's the impact, the cost? You know, if you have somebody who leaves a position, according to the Society for HR Management, SHRM, they've written a number of articles where they estimate the range, the hard cost. Let's start there. The hard cost to replace somebody is like $4,750. You know, that's the actual posting the job, reviewing the application, doing the background check, you know, those kinds of things. So those are the direct costs. But really the indirect costs, you know, lost productivity, the time that the leader has to spend away from the rest of the team to interview people. If there's a panel interview process, pulling other people away from their jobs to do the interview. Let's say you hire somebody, the time that's spent to retrain or train that person, to onboard them and try to get them back to the speed and the level of the previous person in that position is going to take time. And one of the executives I worked for in healthcare said that, you know, when you bring on a leader, for example, she would expect as a CHRO about a year before that person's fully up and running and enculturated with the organization. And of course, where are they most likely to leave? First 12 months of their job. So you got a high rate of turnover in the first 12 months of people. And so what's the cost? According to SHRM, it's anywhere from 1.5 times to 3 times the annual salary of the person you're replacing. So if the average salary in the United States is $59,000 a year, to replace that person on the cheap side, it's going to be about $88,000, $87,000, somewhere in there, but most likely around $177,000 just to replace that one person, to regain that lost productivity and that performance, the profitability of that employee. It's a ding. And if you're losing more than one employee a year, maybe 10. I worked at a healthcare organization. We oriented over 1,200 people a year, every year, in a 12-month period. So 1,200 people in a rolling period, you multiply that by $177,000, and that gives you an idea of how much revenue profit, you know, revenue and lost productivity was on the table because of that. And then there's the cost of absenteeism. I think it was the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, shared that you take the number $1,685, and that's the cost per year per employee in your organization. So you just take $1,685, multiply that by the number of full-time employees you've got. That's what absenteeism is costing in your organization. But if you're in the top quartile of employee engagement, like on a Gallup survey, you're going to see about 41% less of that. So you got some money that you recoup from people not calling in sick, people not coming in late to work or leaving early or trying to milk overtime off the clock, which is theft in a lot of people's eyes. And, you know, engaged employees lead to happier customers, which means happier customers keep coming back for more. And, you know, the top quartile of companies with engagement tend to make 147% more revenue than their competitors in the same industry and see about 21% more profitability, assuming costs of, you know, doing business stay the same. So that there's a lot to be gained from just creating this work environment where people feel that their work is meaningful, that their leader cares about them, that they connect with their coworkers. There's a lot that goes into this, and it's not just some frou-frou, kumbaya type of thing. There's a lot of data by SHRM, by the CDC, by Forbes, but not just by those guys. There's a guy named Sean Acor who does a lot of research on positive psychology. He wrote a book called The Happiness Advantage. And he talked about that the more, and he talked about this in relation to students at Harvard University. And what he found was that students who had more connection with their fellow students, as well as more connection with the school, its culture, they were more likely to perform better in school, finish the 4 years, get their degree, and move on to bigger and better things. Whereas the students who reported that they did not feel connected, did not have any good friends at the campus, did not feel a connection to the school's, you know, spirit, history, culture, those things, they usually dropped out within the first year. And when I was in the military, they had something called, and they still have it, called the sponsorship program. And you could really tell the difference between a unit that uses the sponsorship program versus the ones that don't. The sponsorship program just basically is where you have a soldier transferring into your unit. The orders are usually cut within a month or two before that transfer happens. And they're paired up with somebody who's already in the unit and has been there. And they make connection before the transfer happens. So 1 to 2 months out, you'll get an email or a letter or a phone call from your sponsor who's in your new organization. And they're just building connection there. Like, hey, when you get here, let me know when your flight's landing. I'll pick you up from the airport. You and your family will have dinner with our family. And they're connecting you right away. And the end result is those units have tighter team cohesion. They perform better on the shooting ranges. They perform better in terms of attendance. They have almost no people going AWOL. And then the units that don't really do this well, high rates of people going absent without leave, drug addiction problems, depression, and so on. So there's a lot at stake with connecting with your people and building this environment where people can thrive.
Yeah, and for sure. And I just want to emphasize, when you talk about the cost of turnover, you hit on all of the normal cost to replace an employee. But when you think about, as you mentioned, people quit their boss, they don't quit their job. If you've got engaged employees that are leaving the organization because of a boss who is toxic or a poor leader, the cost of replacing them is even greater. So Jerry, we got to get to the part here of the program where we talk about, so what can we do about this, right? What can we do as leaders to reduce turnover and increase engagement to create this environment that you're speaking of?
Yes. So, you know, Gallup showed top five reasons why people leave their job is they didn't feel connected to the organization or the people there. They didn't have a clarity of expectations of what success looked like. They didn't see opportunities for growth is number three. They didn't have opportunities to use skills they already gained. That's number four. Number five is they didn't feel cared for. And something you said in your book, you quoted a guy named Alexander Don Heyer in The New ROI, and that was, when a flower doesn't bloom, you fix the environment in which it grows, not the flower. And a lot of times we think, well, if somebody's not doing well in this workspace, I need to get rid of that employee. And that really is just in the rare case of actively disengaged people. So if you have somebody who's got toxic behavior, you got to nip that in the bud. That is a poison that is infecting the rest of the pool. You got to take care of that right away. But ultimately, what you want to do is stake your tent in the ground. And I'm a big fan of TENT. I created a servant leadership framework called TENT, T-E-N-T. And I firmly believe that if a leader creates this environment built around servant leadership, they'll have an environment where it meets people where they are in their career. So if you've got a veteran, it's needing them and leading them as a veteran of the organization. And I don't mean like a military veteran. I mean like they've been there for 5 years, 10 years, and so on. If you've got somebody who's growing and emerging as a leader, you're leading them in a way that helps foster that growth. You got somebody who's brand new. You're leading them in a way that helps them succeed. They're learning the ropes. They're learning where all the resources are in the organization, the policies, how we do things, those kinds of things. So in that respect, a leader is mobile and meeting people where they are. Similarly, a leader is adapting to the current environment. You know, we talked about earlier that the COVID pandemic really changed how business is done. And some leaders held firm and fast. The only way to get people back is to bring them all back physically. And they suffered. They've had higher rates of attrition because people were like, I want to work from home too. And I want that flexibility. And the more adaptable leaders were like, okay, this is a new expectation in the workforce. How do I accommodate that and achieve what our customers need and what the company needs? And so their adaptability. And then in the end, you're creating an environment where people feel safe to share ideas, take risks, make decisions, and so on. And I learned in the Army, the fastest way to set up a tent is you stake out the corners first. And if you do that, the frame of the tent comes right up, and then you can start tightening things down, but you're creating that safe environment on the inside. And so the question now is like, what are the four stakes in the ground? And the four stakes are T for trust building, E for empowering others, N for navigating for success, and T for thriving together. And so in each of those, T, trust building, you got to have trust. If people don't trust you have their best interest in mind, they're going to be slightly checked out. They're going to be more disengaged. Whereas if they have high levels of trust, they're going to really tap into what you can do. Empowering is about sharing your power with them so that they have the ability to make decisions without you having to be the bottleneck. Give them a sense of ownership of the work, and you're going to see them really grow it with that sense of ownership and that pride of ownership. Navigating for success, people are looking to grow in their career, grow in their profession, get better at what they're doing, have more impact. So helping them set goals, giving them regular feedback, not just once a year, goes a long way. And then thriving together is really about recognizing them for the work that's being done well. You know, people are six times more likely to stick around if you give them regular recognition, which means once a week, something specific about a behavior they're doing and the impact it has, once a week at least. And not just that, but also allowing for some work-life balance. If people need the flexibility to pick up their kids, figure out how to pull that off. If somebody's sick, trust that they're sick. Let them heal and get better. If somebody lost a family member, do what you can within the policies you've got to allow that part of life to happen and let them grieve. You know, our family had somebody pass away recently, and you know, I think of some jobs where the leader would have given us the flexibility, like, hey, cousin passed away, you go take care of you. We'll take care of the work. You've got the PTO, all that good stuff. We'll see you when you get back. And I've had other leaders that'd be like, well, that wasn't an immediate family member. You're going to have to use PTO, and you needed to have put that in 2 weeks prior. And you're like, what? Like, we were close. We grew up together. What are you talking about? You know, whatever the case may be. And so thriving together is really about that life aspect as well as the recognition. So TENT, I think, is the best way to go, the best way to start that environment where people are thriving, they feel connected, they have clarity of expectations. And it's a great framework to make any decision, because if I'm about to make a tough decision as a leader, I can start asking, does this help build or maintain trust, or is it doing the opposite? Am I empowering my employee? And in what way empowering that person? How am I helping them be more successful in what they do? And then what does success look like? And then when do we thrive together about that? And what kind of recognition would I be able to give them on a job well done?
Yeah, Jerry, you hit on so many things there when you talk about leading with empathy. And I've said this before, but I've had the privilege of working for some leaders who led with empathy, and I would walk through fire for them. I wish I could continue this conversation with you, but unfortunately, we are out of time. It goes quickly here, but I want to thank you so much for joining us today on Behind the Numbers.
Thank you, Dave. I had a great time on here.
It's my pleasure. This guy, he's Jerry Dugan, and he is the founder and CEO of BTR Impact. He's also the author of Beyond the Rut. He's also got a podcast called Beyond the Rut. Definitely look for him, check him out, and a lot of good work and information there. And if you look in the show notes, you'll find that Jerry's providing us a cost of turnover calculator that is free. You can use that and figure out what cost of turnover really is for your organization. I want to thank the Big Cheese for running the board today. Great job over there, as always. My name is Dave Bookbinder, and I'm known for business valuation. If you're a business owner and you don't know what your business is worth, or maybe you want to figure out how to grow your business value, we should have a conversation, and you can find me on LinkedIn. Feel free to reach out. That's all we have for today, folks. We will see you next time on Behind the Numbers. Take care, everybody.